Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, May the 1st, 120th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Simple CPA, Bill McCauley.
Simple CPA.
Blend you and couldn't be together a little bit.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, well, simple-minded might work.
Well, that's kind of what he called you.
Yeah. Probably not the first person to go down that road. Hi, Brian.
So, have you recovered?
I think so, yeah.
Fully?
Well, from what? I mean, if you know, I mean, from my permanent condition.
Your hibernation.
But yeah, from the tax season, yeah, I think I'm definitely recovered.
Good. And sun isn't scaring you anymore?
No. It's kind of, the prospect of it is always encouraging.
Yeah. We'll talk about some of the things that happened. Also, California. Was that, say, California drops property
tax deduction campaign?
Oh. Uh-oh. That doesn't sound good.
No, that's good.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, then we'll talk about what's good when we come back.
I'm Jim Mongi, principal of St. Mary's Catholic School and Preschool. Our preschool program is designed to teach and model basic educational and social skills that children will need for success in kindergarten. Students learn about numbers, shapes, and colors. They begin pre-reading and writing. They develop problem-solving and sharing skills. They learn that school is fun. St. Mary's Preschool provides the foundation for a lifetime of learning. Give us a call today at 822-3877, license number 125-401-910.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 416. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the wise and aged Bill McCauley.
Yes.
Well, did I say how you look?
Yeah. I don't think anything had to do with my appearance.
That's a consistent rubbing of your eyes and holding your head. Whether it's fatigue or fatigue. You can take
Yeah, I have been rubbing my eyes a little today.
All right.
Anyway.
Quote of the day this afternoon comes from Abraham Lincoln. Quote, there are few things wholly evil or wholly good. Almost everything, especially of government policy, is an inseparable compound of the two, so that our best judgment of the preponderance between them is continually demanded.
The best judgment of our preponderance between them.
The balance between the two always has to be monitored.
Oh, well, you want to break it down. I thought we were going to play, you know, at Abe's level, but apparently you're going to have to come down to mine. Okay.
No.
Fine. Welcome down here. How's it feel?
Yeah. Ooh, it's kind of warm down here.
Yeah.
That would be where the coal in the mine is, right, to keep the engine moving.
Absolutely.
So what are you hearing about at the state level?
Well, was it
exciting?
It was interesting. I mean, there is one item that I think is it has face value interest associated with it, and it's got maybe a potentially deeper interest that's associated with it. And the state of California, beginning last year, they began beating the drums that they were going to require that all taxpayers who claimed a property tax deduction include within their tax filing the parcel number for which they were claiming the tax deduction. So as an example, if you
at the house, I'd have to go parcel number 12345. Township 14 or whatever.
Yeah, and it's just AP number. And anyway, it's a relatively, it's on your property tax bill. And the reason they wanted to begin, and they were going to mandate that for 2011 filings, but they realized that there really wasn't time to effectively do that. So they said, but this is coming. And so, you know, the question is, why were they going to do that? Well, the reason that the Franchise Tax Board in the state of California wanted to do that was to curtail some property tax deductions. And what the perceived abuse was from the Franchise Tax Board's perspective was that certain items on that property tax billing aren't necessarily deductible. And they were looking at an old IRS ruling that said that ad valorem taxes, in other words, taxes based on the value of the property, were deductible if they're for the general benefit of the public. But if such things as per parcel fees would not be deductible because they were not based on the value of the property, and irrespective of whether they would be for the general public benefit. And so they felt like that was a pretty sound place to go. So they started pushing that direction. They also sent a letter to the IRS seeking clarification on the issue. And
the state went to the feds and to the IRS for clarification?
Well, they wanted to make sure they wanted to make sure that they were, you know, I think they were just looking for cover for pushing this direction. And
now that one I understand.
And so what happened is that the feds came back and said, that's not a correct reading of this. It did say that basically the U.S. government's position is that certain items may still be deductible even if they're not based on, you know, the value of the property. In other words, and we can all think of these things. I mean, Humboldt Fire District right around around our area here has per parcel assessments by the franchise tax boards. By the interpretation they were seeking to implement, those would no longer be deductible, or those would not be deductible as property taxes.
So when you pile it all up, how much did the state estimate that this little creative stroke was going to generate for them?
You know, I don't know what they totally expected in terms of what the value was. It was going to be in the I think they were thinking that it might be in the values of hundreds of millions, but I don't know exactly what that number is. But as it turns out, you know, they've been cut off the past, and they've said, "Hey, we're going to let this thing go." So what that means is, and you know, if you were in a locale that had a Mello-Roos assessments, which are special assessments for property for particular improvements to the property, those things may or may not be deductible. And what the IRS is saying is you've got to look and see, is that for the general benefit or for a restricted benefit before you would determine whether or not these items would really be not deductible. So the Franchise Tax Board thought they had a bright line, which is, hey, if it isn't based on the value of the property, not deductible. IRS says not so. The IRS says whether or not it's based upon the value of the property, the assessment, if it is for the benefit of the greater good, then it's going to be allowable as a deduction. So that's kind of an interesting deal. The Franchise Tax Board got cut off the knees. There clearly are situations where people are being taxed that aren't really for the you know,
tight-gated community with a surtax.
Sure, or a curb and gutter assessment for a particular area where you could say, okay, they developed and expanded and made an industrial park and they did a curb and gutter assessment in this area. Okay, then what should happen in that case is rather than deducting the payment for the curb and gutter assessment, they should be capitalizing that on the books of the property owner, and then they potentially could depreciate that item depending on facts and circumstances, but really be treating the assessments as basically a payment of the, you know, repayment of that borrowing. So and that could still go on, you know, depending on facts and circumstances. But
KINS News and Information Times 4:23. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money, you won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 4:27. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Bill, before the break, we were talking a little bit about some of the change in interpretation, perhaps, that the feds had, that the state of California didn't quite have with property tax and some of the tax deduction ability. Is that a word?
Deduction ability? It'll work. I think we know what you mean.
Okay, good. Yeah, just kind of hook that trailer and drive off. Yeah.
It's kind of a broadcaster term. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, good, then. We all ought to be very comfortable with it. Is it restricted just to the stuff that you were talking about, or is there some other things? Or could this set precedent in other things that the state or states are trying to do to rectify the train wreck?
I think there's an interesting potential, unintended consequence associated with the state making the argument and losing on it. The state has always contended that when you license your vehicle, you pay a fee, a license fee, and that includes a vehicle license fee, which is based on the value of your vehicle, and then it includes other stuff
and the weight.
There's weight fees different, and then there's the value of the vehicle, and then there's portions that are just registration-y kind of things, okay? Yeah. That's a technical term.
Sausage.
Registration-y.
Yeah. Sure. You like the trailer analogy.
Yeah,
okay, exactly. There goes another one.
I'm coming down to
your
language,
yard.
Man.
Yeah.
Here we go, right down with you. And so I think there's an interesting question, because those registration fees, they aren't really used to benefit just – isolated groups of taxpayers, are they? They kind of are for the general benefit. The weight fees are kind of a general benefit item. And yet, the deductibility has been limited to just the vehicle license fee. So, unwittingly, the state of California may have opened the door to what is a reasonable argument that the entire DMV fee associated with licensing a vehicle would be deductible, as opposed to just the vehicle license fee portion, which is the portion that's based on the value of the vehicle.
So I would think it wouldn't be Brian and Ange or Bill and Cynthia, that this would be somebody who had fleets who would say, hey, state, yeah, what are we going to save? $5?
No.
$10?
No. No. The registration fees are about $69.
Okay.
So
if it was interpreted differently,
You would have a larger deduction,
right,
and less tax revenue,
right. But I mean, for an individual,
I'd have a bigger deduction.
Right.
Therefore, I'm going to have a lower tax liability.
But the savings or the difference would be
the savings maybe isn't big, but you broadcast it across the entire.
No, I understand the multiplier factor. But what I'm thinking is somebody who's got fleets.
Yeah, in general,
they're the guys who got the big bucks who are going to try. I would think, would try to run this one through and have the interpretation apply, because they got so much more potential.
In general, they don't have a problem because they're operating a business, and all that expense really is a business expense. It's really a question is at the individual level is what can you deduct. But, I have four vehicles.
Just for a point of clarification, four vehicles. How many are currently airborne on cinder block?
They are all operable.
Good. None are on the front lawn.
None are on the front lawn.
Okay.
So none of the real Linda references will work here. But the point is, I have two 20-ish year old sons, and we do need a little more vehicle.
KINS, News and Information Times, 4:31.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. We think of the Coast Guard as being gallant lifesavers, and they are. However, there's another side of the Coast Guard, faceless bureaucrats far away. 3 years ago, one wrote to the Humboldt County Fair Association to say they wanted back the Mendocino Lighthouse lens that's been atop the county fair's main entrance for 63 years. The fair offered to build a new building for the lens. A citizen group, Save Our Lens, began to raise money. Then the Ferndale Museum offered to give the lens a new home. Most letters to the Coast Guard have gone unanswered. 2 weeks ago, though, in an undated letter, the Coast Guard warned Ferndale it would soon send a Lempus to begin removing the lens. They didn't say when he'd arrive or give his name, but we think it's Grinch. In Rome 2,000 years ago, the famous orator Cicero spoke of the arrogance of officialdom. If he were here today, he'd put those Coast Guard bureaucrats in that category. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 4:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mo McCauley. We got confirmation during the break from the neighbors that indeed all four cars are not on cinder block.
Yeah. See?
However, no one checked the alley in the back. Mm-hmm. So there could be a fifth Just lingering.
And did they get in the garage?
Well, you'll have to find out when you get home. Okay. You mentioned, or you referenced rather, Ross and Neil, having adult children that are not necessarily fully emancipated. You know, we've got a lot of these, what's it called? It's not boomerang, but when the kids go to college, can't find a job, they come back and they're living with mom and dad.
That's what we call Neil in our house.
Yeah.
Actually, he's still in school. But anyway.
At 35, that's understandable.
He's not 35.
But in that kind of a scenario that really wasn't anticipated but seems to be becoming more and more commonplace, or mom and dad taking care of grandma and grandpa and the kids, so you got the multi-generational stuff. If you said, what is the definition of a dependent? No. Everybody's going to be right there until you hit the thing called age. And then things go sideways. Are there any allowances? Is there any recognition of some of those and other types of changes that are going on because of the economy that are putting people in different situations that could qualify with the spirit of the tax code, may not necessarily qualify?
Well, the tax code is very specific about, as a matter of fact, the term dependent was actually defined, I think, 8 or 9 different ways at one point, depending on which particular provision of law you were looking at.
No, it's 10.
Yeah. And they actually now have a uniform definition of a dependent, which is helpful and kind of healthy for the code, really, to be able to just kind of understand who a dependent might be. It is not a simple definition, unfortunately, but it does bring into, I mean, if, as an example, if you have a dependent who's within certain age guidelines, they can make as much money as they want, and as long as they're a full-time student and you're providing more than half of their support, you can claim them.
So if Jane is knocking out $50,000 a year and still going to school,
that's probably not going to work because you're probably not providing more than half of her support.
But if she's doing $500 a month, you are.
I mean,
now if those monies are going into, let's say, a T-bill or something that really isn't going towards the support, it's funding or it's offsetting student loans.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change anything?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you have to look and see who's providing more than half of her. You know,
it's not revenue; it's the expense side.
Yeah, you're looking to see, are you providing more than half of her support, and you look to see how what the disposition of those dollars are. But if they're, you know, I mean, generally, if for most kids who are in school, and they don't have a heavy scholarship support. For the most part, I would venture to say most of them are technically dependents of their parents because their parents are probably providing more than half of their support. But it's going to depend on facts and circumstances. And so, the law does provide for that. It also provides, but once you go over, you know, once you cease to be a full-time student and your age is at a certain level, then you look at the exemption amount, which was $3,700 last year. If you made more than $3,700, you don't qualify. No matter, you know, even if you made $3,800, you may be out. Even though, so ultimately there are a bunch of tests, and they end up being unfair to certain people, just like everything else in the tax law.
So what about at the other end of the age spectrum? If you're taking care of your folks and providing over half of their income or support, is there any relief there, or are you just doing what you're supposed to do?
Well, you have to look at the earnings test, and then you have to look at, are you providing more than half of their support, and do they meet the earnings test? And if not, you in many cases can claim them as a dependent. So, and that does happen, and we're going to see more and more of that. Interestingly, there was some reports out this week kind of evaluating the impact on the current recovery with the fact that kids were having difficulty, you know, they're getting through college, but they can't find a job. So they're going back to live with mom and dad, and it's got a lot of really negative consequences to the economy in that, of course, they're not working. They're not building up a stake in the workforce. They're not, you know.
They're buying up on the front end either.
You know, we're boomers, right? I mean, you and I are, you know, our birthdays are
boom,
close.
Boom, baby.
Are close, yeah. And the point is, you know, when we get to that point, the projections are that by the time you get around 2030, that there's going to be two workers for every person on Social Security. Right now, it's closer to three, 2.8, I believe, is about where we're at. But the point is, you get down to two workers per supporting one on Social Security, it's not going to work at that point. And unfortunately, we don't seem to have the political willingness or whatever you might, however you might characterize the lack of determination to deal with the problem, to face up. And so all we're doing is waiting and the problem gets worse. It's kind of like, you know, your house needs to be painted and you say, I'll do it later. And you wait, you wait 40 years and you say, I think I'm going to go out and paint the house. Well, it may be, you know, that coat of paint may not be adequate anymore, and the costs associated with that, you know, may be unsustainable.
Thanks for not using the mow the lawn analogy.
You're welcome.
I do appreciate that one. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 4:42. Yeah, I guess we're all being about an hour and a half. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
Hi, this is Craig Brown, Dean of Students and Campus Ministry at St. Bernard's Catholic School. We're praying in these days how we can create an even more definite presence of Christ in the world around us. We pray we all have an opportunity to stop the rush of this time of year to give profound thanks for the many blessings our Lord has showered on us.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 4:45. We're back to Talk Shop. Shiny, sunny afternoon. That'd be weird. You would be home and I would be home and it would be sunny.
And it would be different.
When was the last time that happened? August?
Yeah, it might be.
Bill McCauley is alongside. Okay, and Aaron, too. It'll be a three-way sweep.
Those lawns are in trouble.
Yeah. One of the things, Bill, if we can spend 2 or 3 minutes, this reference to the Buffett rule, Warren Buffett, not paying taxes and da-da-da-da-da as much as secretary. She has earned income. He has investment income. Are they the same thing?
The tax code doesn't see them that way. And a lot of times the theory is that certain types of income we've not taxed at as heavy a rate to encourage that type of, you know, the formation of that type of income.
The behavior.
And so earned income is ordinary income and is taxed at ordinary income rates, which are just your regular graduated income tax structure.
The one we all know and love.
If you're, depending on how you're computing tax, we are also paying, you know, if you're an employee, you have Social Security and Medicare withheld from your wages. So I don't really know exactly how Warren Buffett computes some things, but suffice it to say, you know, I would guess, and I've never seen Warren Buffett's tax return, but I would guess that a big portion of his income is from dividends from stocks that he owns. And the thing about that is, yes, they get a very much preferenced tax rate, and it was done for a very deliberate reason, which that's a 15% preferenced rate. And so, what that rate also recognizes is the corporation. It's not a tax deductible distribution on behalf of the corporation. The corporation is still taxed on the income, whether they distribute it or not. So, in effect, there's a double taxation going on because this income has been earned in a corporation, been taxed at a corporation, and distributed to an individual who then is also taxed on it.
So, is it a fair analogy or a reference to say, or to even compare the two?
It is. In the eye of the beholder, I think, you know, like all things. But I mean, I think that you can certainly make an argument it's a very, very unfair comparison one way or the other. That being said, the other thing that I would point out to Mr. Buffett is there's nothing that prohibits you from paying more tax than what you compute with your tax return. So if you feel like the system is unfair and you'd like to support the system to a greater degree, he's perfectly able to do that. And so to me, there's a certain level of disingenuousness associated with someone who complains that they're not paying enough taxes. They can pay more.
Radio word, by the way.
Pardon?
Disingenuousness.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the other thing is this is the same guy who's contributing most of his assets to Bill Gates Foundation. So that is either going to get him a current tax deduction or it's going to escape estate taxation when he dies. So it seems to me that Mr. Buffett likes to have the benefit of tax deductions, so and yet complains about them. And so I think there's certainly an argument he's a little hypocritical about, you know, how he approaches things.
Do you sense in the next 7 months, we're going to see any significant change in tax law?
Well, that's you know, the $64,000 question. Or the $64 trillion question, I mean, the way we're spending money right now. The problem is that there are a lot of provisions of tax law that are due that will sunset at the end of 2012. And we don't know, you know, probably the outcome of the elections will determine how some of those things get resolved. So that's going to put the ultimate determination of some of those things out to November and December. And Congress generally thinks they should be off then because they've got their Christmas break.
Worked so hard.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what they do. I don't enjoy their job. But the point is, there's going to be a real rush to get these things done, and I don't know how it's going to work out.
Working out, Lons, thanks for the up ending there.
You're most welcome.
Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out making a good day. Hugs, and we'll see you tomorrow.